This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network.
When the bow breaks.
Hello and welcome to episode 50 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave and I am joined by somebody this week who is almost exactly 50 miles. See, episode 50, 50 miles, couldn't have made that up. Exactly east of my current location is our resident Madman Cunion and communications officer. It's Lainey. Hi, Lainey.
Hello. Wow, this is so weird. I'm hosting a show with you. This is crazy.
Have we never hosted a show together?
No.
Wow.
I'm usually with Yannick.
Indeed.
So this is nice to work with the other side.
So to speak.
The other half.
The better half.
Yeah. I'll plead the fifth on that.
Right. Earlier on, you insisted that when you said something derogatory about yourself, that I had to play you a compliment.
Yeah, oh, come on. Yeah, you know I love you guys.
Just because we're recording, it doesn't mean you can't obey the same rules.
Well, you see, the thing is, seems like it's the second week without Yannick, you might be missing his sarcastic comments. So I thought, I'd maybe throw one or two in for you.
Oh, no, in which case I appreciate it, because I have to say, and please don't ever tell him, because I wouldn't say this to his face, I am missing him. I really am.
Although, I mean, yeah, as much as I miss seeing him on a Wednesday night, last week's show, you and Caroline, were absolutely brilliant.
I finished editing that today, and I released it about 3 hours ago. It was about an hour ago. And I've got to say, it was one of the best episodes we've ever done.
It was fabulous.
But it's more because, I think because, obviously, Caroline and I are married. We've been married for like 19 years. We can say things to each other that we don't have to think about what we're saying.
Yeah.
And I did put a disclaimer at the beginning of the show that it will contain domestics.
Mm-hmm. And it did. You did not disappoint.
No, exactly. So, anyway, we'll see where this one goes. So, on this week's episode, we'll be carrying out a review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 17, When the Bow Breaks. And I have no doubt we'll be talking about other stuff as we go throughout the show. So, if you are ready...
Yep. Ready, let's go.
We shall crack on with that review. So, in the teaser, we find ourselves aboard the Enterprise-D. We see Commander William Riker walking through the ship when he's called by Captain Jean-Luc Picard to report to the bridge. Suddenly, we hear the voice of Dr. Harry Barnard Sr. calling out for his son, Harry Jr., who comes running round the corner, straight into Riker. Riker helps Harry Jr. back on his feet, asking, "What is the rush?" Then, Dr. Barnard approaches. It turns out Harry Jr. has walked out of a calculus class, vowing never to go back. Dr. Barnard firmly redirects Harry back to the class as Riker heads for the turbo lift, slightly perplexed. Now, I'm going to say this. I did calculus. I didn't understand it, but boy, did I love it.
I don't think I ever actually did it, or if I did, it was called something else.
Because I did it for A-level, and, well, I say I did it for A-level, I attempted it for A-level, and it was under the heading of pure mathematics and mechanics. So the whole concept around calculus is about engineering and calculating. It's essentially a way of calculating the tangent of a point of a graph.
Right, okay.
Okay. Now, I understand kind of how... Well, I understand it was like 30 years ago. I kind of understand how it works. I kind of understand how to do it. But I really could not get my head around the actual practical application of calculus because I am not an engineer. Simple as.
Yeah.
So, that kid was probably... I don't know, I'll be generous. 10 years old, maybe slightly less.
Yeah, I would probably go the same.
There's no way I would expect my son, who is 7, to even think about trying to do mechanical mathematics. I did it when I was 16, 17, and I struggled with it.
I don't know. I mean, maybe if they started it really basic when they're young, maybe they could pick it up and kind of understand it a little bit better. I've never done it. But I do know, obviously, I've been a teaching assistant myself and worked in schools. I do know the younger you start them on something, the quicker they tend to pick it up and understand it.
Yeah, maybe. I suppose on a starship, the requirement to learn Latin is probably not quite as great as it was in the 20th century, certainly. And I think as we discovered from Picard, which is only, what, is it 20, 30 years ahead of where we are at the moment? Things like French, what we classify as traditional languages, are now almost ceremonial. They're historic rather than current. So I suppose scientific pursuits in terms of education are probably more the norm.
But I suppose, like, employment things are probably a little bit, there aren't as many, you know, it's like there's not a lot of creative stuff or no need for, you know, chefs and things like that in the 24th century. But obviously you need someone to keep a starship in the sky.
Yes, that is a very good point, in fact. They're probably trying to create the scientists, communications officers, engineers of the future.
Yeah. So it's probably essential for them to get that into the child as early as possible.
I suppose so. That kind of makes sense. Did you think that Dr. Bernard seemed a little bit rough with Harry Jr.?
I thought it was very weird because he just seemed very rough with little Harry. But I didn't see the respect that number one should have got
from the doctor.
From the doctor.
You know, I picked up on that.
Now, to me, there should have been more there rather than just, oh, come on, child, let's get you back. There should have been more.
When Dr. Bernard appeared on the scene, when we actually saw him and he approached Riker, it's almost as if he kind of stopped and recognised who Riker was. And I expected something along the lines of, oh, I'm sorry, sir, or I'm sorry, Commander. But there was no show of any recognition of Riker's rank whatsoever. And as you say, there was no demonstration of respect towards him.
No. I thought that was weird. It was just a case of, oh, sorry if he's bothering you.
Mm.
And he just dragged the child off.
Yeah.
Maybe discipline's a little different in 300 years, but...
It's possible. You know. It's possible. I mean, Dr. Bernard is obviously of the scientific community. That's the uniform he's wearing. But at the same time, in a scenario like that, you have to respect the chain of command.
Yeah, but I mean, even Dr. Crusher, who is head medical officer, shows that respect.
She does, so yes.
Why doesn't somebody there who is obviously her? I can't think of the word I wanted to say.
Subordinate.
Yeah, that's the word. Thank you. it's going to be one of those days.
Uh-huh.
So why, you know, he should have done. Because, I mean, we know Dr. Crusher technically is either the same level as Riker or slightly higher. Because, obviously, if the captain's ill, then she has decisions. She has the final say on his health.
Yeah, I think in the business as usual chain of command, Riker would outrank Dr. Crusher. But in that one circumstance, when the captain or theoretically anybody who is in command of the starship at any one particular time, there are circumstances under which she could outrank them. And she has demonstrated that in a couple of occasions so far this season. But I think she is a commander, as is Riker, but that doesn't necessarily give them the same operational rank, even though they may have the same military rank.
I suppose it would probably be, like, he's obviously, like, say, operational, he's technical, So they're probably the same level, but obviously of different sides. So if it's to do with the running of the ship, then it's Riker. Hmm. If it's to do with medical, then it's Crusher. Dr. Crusher, excuse me.
Yes, yes. Not entirely sure how that would work. I'm sure that if Nate were listening, he would be able to correct us on that one. Because I would imagine you get a similar situation, actually, in the terrestrial military.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
On the bridge, Picard tells Riker that they have been tracking faint energy readings coming from the Epsilon Minos system, the alleged location of the legendary planet Aldea. Counselor Deanna Troi picks up a strong sense of thousands of mines very close to them. Picard orders the Enterprise-D all stop. Then Worf reports a distortion ahead. On the viewer, we see the revealing of a planet that Riker believes to be Aldea.
Right, I have a question. Mm. Right, we know, because of what Will had explained about the myth of Aldea, that they have cloaking and shields. So if they have the shields that block communication and the transporter, how can Counselor Troi pick up the psychic link?
That is a very good question, although it kind of gets answered later on, because there is a suggestion that the shield may not be as efficient as the planet believes it is. So there may be, for want of a better phrase, and I apologise for the word, some leakage.
Yes, maybe. There's something else about that teaser as well that made me laugh. Now, I don't know if you picked up on it. When Will walked onto the bridge and he's walking up the ramp to the rest of the crew members, he was limping, or should I say dragging his foot after he'd been run into. I just thought it was a little bit overdone, personally.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he was walking up the ramp, and it looked like he was just dragging his left foot.
No, I missed that.
Maybe it's just me. I don't, you know, I'm just seeing a bit of everything at the moment. It was funny. It made me laugh. I just thought it was very overdone, very overly dramatic.
I'll have to watch that back, I think.
Yeah. You should. Let's see if you pick it up the same way I did.
So we're on to Act 1. A woman contacts the Enterprise and introduces herself as Rachella, welcoming them and wishing to talk with them. Suddenly, she and Radu, introducing himself as their leader, appears on the bridge, startling everybody, notably Dr. Crusher, as they did not undergo decontamination procedures by going through the transporter. But they quickly explain that the Enterprise's transporters won't work because of the planet's shields. They formally invite them to the planet, but also show visible signs of discomfort, which they justify by not being used to bright lights. And soon afterwards, they beam back down to the planet. Now, I'm not convinced about this bright light excuse.
No, well, I noticed there was only him, Radu. I called him, that was very disrespectful. Rachella just seemed fine with the light. There was only Radu that looked like he was suffering.
Yeah, but she's a woman, so she wouldn't complain about things as men do.
All right, I'll take that one.
I thought you would. Very, very convenient for you to immediately accept that one.
Why not?
Well, I suppose.
I must say, though, when Rachella appeared on the screen, they seemed quite surprised to see a female humanoid. I don't know what they were expecting to see as regards population of the planet, but they all looked quite taken aback by the fact that she was a female humanoid.
I don't see how they would have been, because in the explorations they've been carrying out so far, they've seen pretty much everything there is to see. So I don't understand why they would have been so surprised to see a female humanoid, unless it wasn't the fact that she was a female humanoid, it was more the fact that she suddenly appeared.
Maybe. Almost as suddenly as they appeared on the bridge.
Now that obviously would be a surprise.
And what happened to security?
I've said this before, the number of times where we've seen beings, for want of a better collective phrase, appearing on the bridge randomly, it just doesn't make sense. And to be fair, when Q first appeared on the bridge of the Enterprise back in Encounter at Farpoint, which was the first episodes of the season, nobody complained about him not going through... Sorry, I say him. It. Because it's we don't know what kind of being it actually is. Nobody complained about it going through decontamination then.
Yeah. And why, if they've not been through decontamination, why accept the gift and keep it on the Enterprise?
Now, is that a voice very much aligned to the current crisis in the real world speaking? Because
I think it's just if they go through a decontamination process on the Enterprise's transporters, then they obviously haven't. So anything they would have brought with them will have been possibly contaminated, as the beings may have been. Hmm. So why accept it if they've not?
I have no idea.
Oh yeah, there was something else I picked up on. It was just a question that popped into my head because I'm not a big watcher of the series. When Radu mentioned that they'd monitored the communications, is there not something on the Enterprise that would have alerted that? I'm sure in other episodes and other shows I've seen where things like that have been picked up on.
So, yes. I think the fact that there are secure and unsecure channels that can be opened in communication with other ships, Starfleet, whatever. And bearing in mind, this episode, I think, came out in 1988, before communication security was properly a thing, that they probably did a lot of their communications in the clear.
Mm.
So... it's possible that if they have been doing communications with Starfleet or with other ships or whatever, then, yeah, it wouldn't be that difficult for somebody to intercept them. Unless, and this is the more concerning bit, they're talking about communications within the ship because they knew what Riker's name was without being told. Later on in the episode, they know what Wesley's name is without them having been told. And under normal circumstances, I can't see how Wesley's name would have been used in any ship-to-ship or ship-to-shore transmission. Sorry, ship-to-shore. Ship-to-Starfleet transmission would have mentioned Wesley's name.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. I just thought it'd be really bizarre that the ship itself wouldn't have picked up on something like that.
No.
As far as I remember, it does normally. Unless their technology is just really, really good, that it can kind of creep in.
I don't know. It's a weird one.
Mm.
Picard is impressed by the use of technology, despite being so isolated. But Riker is convinced that they've been guided to Aldeia. Troy senses that the Aldeans want something from the Enterprise, something that the people on the ship value greatly, but they're afraid that they won't get it.
Mm. Typical Star Trek, though, isn't it? It's like they're led somewhere for a purpose, and they never know what it is until they get there.
No, exactly. But I'm racking my brains to at this point, thinking, what is it they could want? What is it they would want that is so valuable to the Enterprise or to the people on the Enterprise that they would want it, and the people on the Enterprise would be reluctant to give up? Obviously, we know what that is.
Yeah,
but at this point in time, I can't work out what it might be.
No, I think the only thing I thought of it was maybe, I don't know, a piece of early technology or early to them or fuel or, you know, something technical. But no, I could not think at that point.
No. Without warning, Commander Riker, Deanna Troi and Dr. Crusher are transported to the surface of Aldeia and they're welcomed to their community. However, the Aldean motives are quickly revealed as Radu explains that he wishes to acquire some of the Enterprise's children in exchange for technology. This outrages both Riker and Crusher, and Troi explains that humans are very attached to their children. Other species may be tempted by the offer. Then Radu explains that the Aldean society is dying out and they've become infertile. Riker expresses his sympathy but declines their trade offer. Radu promptly returns them to the ship.
Right. If they were outraged, they kept it very inwardly.
Well, you could see their immediate knee-jerk reaction was that of...
Yeah, I would say they were, like, shocked. But, I mean, to me, if I'd have been Beverly Crusher, I'd have been like, I don't think so, mate.
Mm. But they're all professionals. And they know they have to behave in a certain way amongst species they're not familiar with.
Yeah, but when you risk losing your only child...
Granted.
You know, you don't poke a mama bear.
True.
And if they knew so much about the crew on the Enterprise, they must have known that one of the children they were possibly looking at was going to be Wesley.
Yes, absolutely.
I thought that was really, because she just kind of sat there and stared at him. And we know she's a redhead and she's a fiery redhead.
Oh, most definitely. Cannot dispute that. But at the same time, she may not have realised there was a risk to the children on the Enterprise, the direct risk to the children on the Enterprise. So her response would have been kind of a, you what?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I didn't see it like that.
No, that's fair. The act of effectively yoinking three members of the crew from the bridge onto the planet's surface, asking a question, getting a no, and then essentially throwing them back to where they came from. For a society that's supposed to be so, at the very least, technologically advanced, they are incredibly immature.
Yeah, it is. It was kind of like throwing the dummy out of the pram, wasn't it? Mm. It's like, oh, you're not giving us what we want, so go away. We don't want to play with you anymore. I'm taking my ball and going in.
Precisely that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can't have it, I can't have it kind of thing. We see a lot more of that throughout the episode too. Meanwhile, strange beams of light come from the planet, scanning everybody on board, but focused on the children, such as Wesley Crusher on the bridge. Data reaches out to help him, but Picard warns him not to touch the teenager, as they may unknowingly harm him. Suddenly, to Dr. Crusher's alarm, Wesley is beamed away by the Aldean's transporter, and the disappearances of several other children across the ship are reported. I'm like, whoa, blimey.
I know, it was just like, oh. Okay, they've come back and, oh, now Wesley's gone. What the flipping hell is going on? It's like, you know, you just kidnapped seven kids off a spaceship. That's not very polite.
Did you notice that Radu called Riker intransigent, which I think is a lovely word? But despite being intransigent, he was willing to commit kidnap. That's kind of a really odd... almost like hypocritical response.
But again, it goes back to that immature thing, doesn't it?
Mm.
It's like, well, you've said no, but we'll have it anyway. You tell a kid no, and they'll do whatever they can to get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, no, you can't have a biscuit, but they'll go and sneak one anyway and hide while they eat it.
Yep, I used to do exactly that.
Oh, yeah, I did. I think pretty much every kid's done that.
Right, so we're now on to Act 2. The captain is infuriated and contacts Radu, demanding to have their children back. Radu appears on the view screen and informs Picard that the children will be well looked after and that they'll want for nothing. He wants to discuss compensation, but Picard's response prompts him to close communications. Now, that is because, and quite justifiably so, Picard lost his rag.
Yeah.
I think the word he used was barbaric or barbarians or something along those lines.
Yeah. I mean, you don't often see Picard lose his temper like that.
Not like that, no.
No. I mean, it's understandable. But one thing that made me laugh, and it's the writers, it's down to them. Stating the obvious, Radu comes on the screen and it's, Captain, your children are with us. Well, heck no.
Duh.
Not really.
Yeah.
You sure? You know, it's like, I think they'd kind of work that out.
Repeating the obvious.
Yeah, but it was, Jean-Luc definitely, he manned up at that point.
Mm. How did the Aldeans even begin to believe that they were able to consider that any compensation for kidnapping their children could be appropriate?
They've probably never dealt with Earth people before, because they've obviously, you know, they've been hidden, and they probably haven't come in contact with many species. So, I don't know, maybe other species have allowed them.
That's exactly what Troy said earlier, that humans are very attached to their offspring, but other species may or may not be. Part of it could be the fact that there is a clear sense of desperation on the part of the Aldeans, and I accept that. I understand that they do have a problem. The problem they have is survival. And if you're in a situation where your species is under threat from something, even if that's a... Well, at this stage, we don't know what it is. We just know the outcome. We don't know the cause.
Yeah.
Then they're going to be willing to do whatever it takes in order to try and ensure that their species survives beyond whatever it is that they're currently going through. And I tell you what's really, really key and critical at this point, and this becomes apparent later on, is that they don't know what it is that's causing the issues they're experiencing.
No, they just think it's genetic and that's the way they were made or born.
Precisely. So they're thinking, okay, well, we can't have children because we are suffering from some form of infertility. So let's bring some kids on. I mean, that's a problem in and of itself. You'd actually think they would bring young people, young adults, onto the planet, not infants.
Yeah.
Because they're obviously thinking of one thing, and that's repopulating their species, which isn't going to happen with a child. One of the kids that was sent down there was probably no more than about 4 or 5.
I know. I don't know, maybe it's they'll kind of... They thought, like, well, we'll make them like us and they'll learn our ways and they'll become one of us. And then, obviously, when they get older, they can produce offspring. But I don't think they took an even number of male and female. And if they were the only youngsters on the planet, then that'd be a bit... There'd be some... right fun going on there.
I get what you're saying. I have no response to it at all.
No, none needed.
I don't know. Hedging their bets, maybe.
Maybe.
Picard and Dr. Crusher, along with Troy, have a meeting with the other parents in the conference lounge to explain what's happened. Picard is going to have Dr. Crusher with him to represent the other parents and assures them that the Enterprise will not leave without the children. On Aldea, Wesley and the children meet their new foster parents and are quickly enticed by the skill-enhancing instruments offered to them. Wesley, however, is not impressed by the Aldeans and resists. Radu attempts to label him as the leader of the group and gives him the task of helping the others adjust, since he has no choice, like the Aldeans.
I like that. I liked them putting Wesley in a leader role. Because, I mean, yeah, he's only young. He's, what, 13, 14 years old at this point?
Something along those lines, yes.
Yeah. And it's like, we've seen him do childish things and do silly things. And we know he's clever. We know he's smart. But I think it gave him that responsibility and showed him in a more grown-up light to the way he has been before.
Yeah, agreed. But I don't think they wanted to give him a responsibility. I just think they wanted him on side.
Possible.
Now, the Aldeans mention something called the Custodian. Now, we already know that the Custodian is not a person. We don't know what it is at this stage. But I was wondering at the point that I saw this whether it was some kind of higher being that the Aldeans revere.
Mm. I don't know. It's one of those, isn't it? He's like.
Mm.
And something else that you can't see, but is obviously there. But what?
Yeah. It just seemed a bit weird that they mentioned this Custodian and then kind of just carried on as if it was never mentioned in the first place.
Mm.
We find out later on what it is anyway.
Yeah.
I also noticed that some of the younger children seem to adapt to the situation a bit too easily. The lass that we now know as Alexandra, she was the really young, like 4 or 5 year old. She was seen kissing Rochella as if she was her mother. She was behaving towards her as if she was her mother. And even to the point where Rochella didn't want to let her go, because as I understand it, Rochella was not the foster parent who was assigned to Alexandra.
No, there was somebody else, and she basically said, no, you're not getting her.
Yeah, she's mine.
I thought what was weird was they've just been kidnapped, basically, off the Enterprise, and they're on this strange planet. When Alexandra walked towards Rochella to shake her hand, Wesley didn't try and stop her. Now, to me, he should have kind of, gone to, pull her back, or at least grab her shoulders.
See, this is where Wesley is still a child. He's actually one of the people affected by this. Is the assignment of him as the leader of the group was not his choice. Therefore, he's feeling as deprived as the smaller children are. So he's going to be in no situation to think, hang on a second, something's wrong here. I need to think out for the children. Yeah. He's probably more thinking, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Where's my mum?
Yeah.
And if you're dropped into a brand new scenario, as a child, you're probably not aware of danger as much as you would be as an adult. You know, we look around and we see scenarios and we immediately judge them, rightly or wrongly, for what we see, not what they are. Children don't do that. Children are very trusting. So, I mean, I can count on two fingers and a hand. Well, twice it's happened. That's probably why. Where one of my kids has merrily wandered off with a stranger because they felt comfortable with them and because the stranger was chatting to them. Now, obviously, we absolutely flipped on the occasions where that happened, because that is not something you want to happen. You don't want one of your children walking away with a complete stranger, even if the intent is good.
Yeah.
Kids have no fear.
No.
So if you drop a child into a scenario where, ooh, shiny's all around me, they're not going to think beyond it.
Yeah.
Until possibly later on. Well, I'm not going to give anything away at this stage, but yeah, the novelty will eventually wear off.
Yeah, I mean, a little girl like that, see a pretty lady dressed in colourful clothes and being friendly. Yeah, I understand that.
Mm. Riker reports that Data has discovered random fluctuations in the shield, holes in essence, that could possibly be used to transport an away team through. Riker is surprised that the Aldeans haven't perfected their technology after all this time and eliminated the flaw. As using a hole would have to be precise with timing and there would be no guarantee, Data notes it may be better to crack the code used to transport through the magnetic shield, but it will take time as the sheer number of possible codes is almost endless. While Data works on it, Picard orders Riker to work with LaForge to figure out a way through the hole. An away team can then find the power source for the shield and neutralise it. Picard knows that they're going to have to keep the Aldeans talking, because once they realise the crew will not accept anything but the children's return, they will just turn the cloaking device back on and the Enterprise will lose any chance they have to get them back.
And the seriousness on Picard's face, it's like, you know, this is terrible. This is the worst thing that could possibly happen.
But it's also on his shoulders.
Yes.
Not the situation in itself is not on him. It's not his fault. But the responsibility on his shoulders to get those children back, that must be very heavy on him.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, again, it's like, how are they so calm? I mean, I know Picard rarely loses his cool, but it's just so calm. I'd be effing and just stomping around.
I don't know.
I mean, I know it makes for good TV and all, but it's, no. I suppose rage in the 24th century is a little bit different.
There's also image.
Yeah.
Image has to be maintained. So losing your rag and starting to sort of kick things and throw things around is not a particularly good look.
Oh, very true, very true.
So we're on to Act 3 then.
I like this one.
Duana introduces Wesley to the custodian for storing records of him. Wesley immediately wants to know more about the computer system, which takes care of the Aldeans' every need. He asks about what the other children are doing and interacts with the custodian and learns the controls. He also asks what's behind one of the doors, but Duana admits that she doesn't know. On the Enterprise, Radu speaks to Picard, who insists that any contract negotiations must be attended by at least two staff officers, indicating that Dr. Crusher will also be attending. After the transmission is closed, Data questions Picard on the quoted Starfleet Regulation 6.57, which he says he's not familiar with. Neither, as it turns out, was Picard.
I love that. That was my scene of the episode.
Yes, it was almost my quote of the week when Data almost did a double take where he said, I see, sir. And then there was a pause and he went, oh, I see, sir.
I mean, it's not often, again, Picard is normally very straight-laced, keeps, you know, dead chilled out. He very rarely makes jokes or does something cheeky like that. But that was classic.
That's the thing, though. The fact that Picard is able to maintain a straight face under pretty much any circumstance means he can concoct the most outrageous porky pies and
get away with it.
His authority, his manner and bearing give it credence. I mean, I was almost sold by the Starfleet Regulation 6.57, other than the fact that it just sounded a little bit too specific. And he was able to recall it so quickly.
And it fit the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was designed specifically to counter an objection or an anticipated objection by the Aldeans. But because the Aldeans, we've already ascertained, are not a particularly mature race, they're probably also not particularly intelligent enough. And I mean no disrespect by that, to have realised that he just made that up on the spot. If you sound authoritative, then most times you'll be perceived as authoritative. And therefore, why would they have any reason to question what he's saying? They don't know Starfleet regulations.
If you believe what you're saying, then they will too.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Picard and Dr. Crusher are transported to the planet to negotiate for compensation for the children. They refuse to give the children back, thinking that it's not a problem as they can have more children. But the captain warns that the Aldeans are messing with a primal human instinct and that parents are willing to die if necessary for their children. To Crusher's questions about the children's future fertility, Radu is convinced that the problem is a genetic dysfunction and not contagious. Picard nevertheless remains amicable and says that they sympathise with the Aldeans and he's open to a satisfactory solution to both sides. The Aldeans see their problem as solved, as they're offering the sum of their knowledge. What more could they want? Picard manages to convince him to let Dr. Crusher see Wesley. While with him, she coordinates a covert scan of Duana with the hand scanner from her medical tricorder. Rejoining Picard, she reports her son and the others are well. Radu states that the crew have their offer, which is final, and the away team is sent back to the ship.
She's even sneakier than Picard.
She is well sneaky. She's not particularly good at concealing her actions. I thought that was a pretty blatant use of the scanner and Wesley to utilise the scanner on her. In fact, do not the scanners make a little noise?
I put that in my notes. I thought they beeped or did something.
Yeah.
They must have a vibrate and a silence setting on.
It must be. It must be. She must have flicked the silence switch before she gave it across.
It was one of those things. It's just like, a tricorder is kind of like a mobile phone or a smartphone because it can do so much. So,
Pretty much.
I suppose.
Yeah, it's a portable scanner / database.
Yeah. So maybe it does have silent settings. Who
or
knows?
She cut the wire when nobody was looking. I don't know.
Who knows?
Radu decides to show the Enterprise that there is no bargaining room and displays the planet's power by blasting the ship and throwing it back in 10 seconds, the equivalent distance of 3 days' travel from the planet at warp 9. He claims he could very easily push the Enterprise so far away that by the time they returned to Aldea, their children would be grandparents. What the actual heck did they think to achieve by that quite grotesque show of force?
I thought, because at the very beginning, Riker said they're a peaceful people, you know, they just want to be left alone and, you know, live their own lives. Why would you have a beam that could do something like that? Because, well, you know, it's not like they need defences because they're cloaked and they're shielded. Or is that just me thinking too logically and not?
No, I think you've kind of got it. But I think this also then... So, later on in the episode, we get a better understanding of what the custodian is. And I don't think I'm giving too much away by saying at this stage that the cloaking device and the shield that they use to operate is fully and totally controlled by the custodian.
Yes.
So I think it stands to reason that this blast, this ray that they shot at the Enterprise, was probably also controlled by the custodian, but requested by, in this case, Radu. So I think it's more a question of what is the custodian? What is the custodian capable of? Now, we get an answer to that later on.
Yeah.
But there may well be a reason for defences that we're not fully aware of. And I think, in honesty, that doesn't get answered by the remainder of the episode. We don't find out why on earth they would have this this blaster that doesn't actually cause any damage, although I think Picard does mention that it's a weapon of such magnitude that it could have actually disintegrated the ship. But yeah, it didn't, it pushed it.
So obviously it wasn't fired at full force.
Well, no, obviously not, from the claim that they could, you know, force it billions of light years away. So, I don't know.
There's a lot that isn't answered. There's a lot of questions that I didn't get an answer to for Aldea.
That was always going to be the case. Yeah. Always. And in series such as these, where there is a technology in play that we don't understand, we're always going to pick holes in. You know, if this beam was capable of moving the Enterprise 3 days away at warp 9 in the space of 10 seconds. Well, yeah, by rights, that should have absolutely obliterated the Enterprise. So how did it do it? We're never going to get an answer to that.
No.
And from a very poorly educated guesstimate, it wouldn't be possible, even in that scenario. But we're being asked to believe that it is possible, even though I don't. I believe that the Enterprise can travel at warp 9 for the purposes of this, but I don't believe that that beam could have thrown the Enterprise that far out at that short a time span and not cause it damage.
I don't know how these things work. I'm still learning.
Well, we're not asked to, really. It's not something we're being asked to understand or believe. I think it's just the nature of things that in 1988, all of this was completely unrealistic. But the whole point of science fiction / science fantasy is you put yourself in a scenario where you are actually in an environment and a point in time where these things may be possible. And you're being asked to accept that these kind of things are possible. Unfortunately, with the likes of myself and you and Yannick and Ro and Caroline and Chris and John and all, we are unwilling to accept that.
I think we're all just really logical people, and it's like we see reality as it is, and we don't want to see anything different, or can't see anything different.
No, but the transporter's real.
I wish it was.
Yeah.
It'd make travelling so much easier.
Particularly the transporter on Aldea, where you just say, custodian, zoop, and you're there.
I know. That'd be so
There's
good.
None of this. A little bit fuzziness, and you disappear and sort of reappear in the place. No, it's zoop, and you're there.
So that reminds me, it's something that I'll bring up in the next bit.
Oh, okay.
Or I think it's, yeah, in a little bit.
Cool, okay. Okay, so we're on to Act 4. On Aldea, the foster parents are showing the children their chosen activities. A musical device that works in the player's feelings, a sculpting tool that operates from the artist's thoughts. During the return trip to Aldea, Picard tells Radu that there is room for discussion and ends the communication. Dr. Crusher has analysed the covert scan and discovers that Duana is dying, suffering from some chromosomal damage, probably like the rest of the population. Crusher can't determine if it's genetic or environmental, so leaves to determine the cause. And my quote of the week is in that scene. I think it's where Picard questions Data on how he's getting on with trying to identify the permutations of being able to crack through the shield. And Data says, it's virtually impossible. And Picard then shouts out, things are only impossible until they're not.
It's very true.
Which I thought, yeah, it's a great quote. On Aldea, the children each show signs of dissatisfaction while being taught their respective activities, particularly when they're thinking of their families back on the Enterprise. Wesley, however, firmly says to Radu and Duana that, although he feels bad for their situation, they don't want to be there and they are not going to cooperate. That night, he decides to convince the younger children to help him in an attempt to make the Aldeans return them to the ship by not interacting with them. Using the custodian, he locates all of the children and explains to them that it is a form of passive resistance. He assures them that while the Aldeans may become upset, they will not harm them, as they need them. While a couple of the children are not sure of Wesley's plan, he reminds them that whilst the Aldeans are very nice, they all want to go home, and he gets the mutual solidarity he needs. Suddenly, Rochella walks in and finds them.
Oh. Yeah, kind of a weird decision, but I get it. I understand why he would go down that route.
The route of effectively going on strike?
Yes. I mean, to be fair, I think if the Aldeans were that desperate for to have the children, I don't think even a strike would convince them to let them go, personally. But I'm not an Aldean, so.
I agree with you, but I can't help thinking that if the Aldeans are expecting that the human, well, are they all, yeah, they're all humans. The human children that are on the planet are of a certain disposition, or they behave a certain way, or they kind of meet their expectation of what a child of their community should look like. If the child in question effectively rejects all of the things that the Aldeans are expecting them to be, you know, if you bought something and you found it was faulty, you would take it back.
Yeah.
And I think that may be the logic that Wesley's trying to go down.
Yeah, maybe. But it's like they absolutely have to have these children. And, you know, they were willing to just take them off the ship. I don't know, maybe they, you know, they think, oh, if the children aren't happy, then there's no point because they're not going to do what we want them to do. It's one of those questions, isn't it, that you never get answered.
No, exactly. But I do question as to why Wesley thought that holding their meeting in a communal area was an intelligent thing to do.
Because it wasn't in one of their family, quote-unquote, units, where they could have been found quicker, because everyone was asleep.
I suppose. Well, no, they weren't, because Rochella was up and about.
Yeah, but it looked like it had got light by that point.
Yeah, we don't know how long they were talking for.
No.
Meanwhile, on Enterprise, Dr. Crusher considers the possibility that Aldea is suffering a situation that affected Earth in the 21st century, a weakening of their ozone layer. Now, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, it's kind of like, because what year was it, 87?
I think it was produced in 87 and released in 88, or around that period.
So, yeah, I suppose climate change and the ozone layer were probably big news around then, from what I can remember.
I'm trying to remember when the whole CFCs thing came out, and I think that was in the 1990s. So it may have just been a punt.
Maybe.
Life imitating art kind of thing. I've got to say, it's the only thing that has been said so far in this entire episode that I'm actually like, yeah, that's possible.
But again, 24th century, I suppose anything's possible.
Yeah. Obviously, they know a lot more about our lives. Well, they don't. They've had to try and guess what our lives were like in the production future, which is actually the universe past.
Can you imagine what they would think of this year in the 24th century?
No, quite frankly.
I wonder if they would see it the same way we all see it, a complete bust. Let's just jump to 2021 and get on with it.
I have absolutely no idea.
The year that time forgot.
I'll say this because it's relevant. Do not forget, The Jetsons was produced in the early 1960s.
This is very true.
I know that has nothing to do with Star Trek whatsoever, but actually it does, because Star Trek and The Jetsons have one primary thing in common, it's a view of the future.
Yeah.
Without knowledge of the past. And to say that what the Jetsons predicted in 1962, I think it came out originally, it was only around for a couple of years in its initial stages, and the kind of things that we're experiencing now, I don't know where the series was set, in what time the series was set, but I'm imagining it would have been probably not far from the time we're at now. So, yeah, it is possible to predict the kind of future that may be. And I think that both the Jetsons and Star Trek have not done a bad job of it.
I'm just trying to have a look, see if it'll give me an idea of what sort of time it was set. I mean, I would imagine it'd be like after 2000.
I would imagine so. If you're in the 1960s and you're thinking, what's the future, then the 21st century is a pretty good place to start. Okay, so on to the final act, Act 5. Upon the Enterprise's return, Crusher confirms that the Aldeans are suffering from acute radiation poisoning, which is causing the infertility. It also explains their pallor, general lack of appetite, and sensitivity to light. While Data says it will take too long to decode the Aldeans' transporter beam, LaForge has found that the holes in the shielding can be used to beam down a team with the right timing. When Radu beams Picard and Crusher down to negotiate, Worf carefully orders the transporter officer to beam Riker and Data down to Aldea in a discreet location. They are successful and manage to locate the custodian.
Now, this is what I was going to mention before when you were talking about the difference of speeds in the transporters, whereas the Aldeans is pretty much instantaneous, but the difference in length of time for them to even say yes, send them down, when Worf tells them to go down. I'm not sure that the hole, I mean, would it have kind of stayed open that long? Because it takes them forever to transport from the Enterprise.
I suppose it depends on what they were waiting for. Were they waiting for a hole to be opened by the Aldean transporter so that they could then kind of squeeze through it while it's open? Or were they waiting for an opportunity where the transporter beam from the Enterprise could be mistaken as the transporter of the Aldeans?
Yeah. Well, it's because it seemed to take Worf a couple of seconds once Beverly and Jean-Luc had gone, had been transported down, and then it's like another 5 seconds on the transporter pad.
I guesstimate about 10 seconds overall from the point that Picard and Crusher got beamed off of the bridge to the point where Riker and Data may have actually been transported for completed transport to the planet.
Yeah, it just seems... And it's like, again, they've got all this technology. Why weren't they noticed? Why didn't... Was there no alarm, no security?
Again, this is something that will come up later on.
Right, okay. I must have missed something later.
I don't think it's actually mentioned in the Memory Alpha review, so I will pick it up specifically towards the end. Radu meets with Picard and Crusher and first demands that he make the children end their strike. Picard goes to the children and surprises Radu by taking them back to him and reveals that Riker and Data are actually on the planet. Crusher tries to convince Radu that the cause of the infertility is the planetary shield and cloaking device affecting their ozone layer, similar to Earth in the 21st century. Obviously, it wasn't a cloaking device, it was aerosol cans. Eventually, the children will become affected as well. Radu does not believe her, insisting that their scientists would have known, but Crusher retorts that they've been so reliant on their technology, they've stopped questioning it or know how it works. Radu attempts to beam the officers away, but his commands to the custodian are not responding. Riker and Data have managed to disable it. Picard has the Enterprise beam up the children, but not before young Harry Bernard says goodbye to his adopted father, Acalan, saying that he should keep the dolphin that he made. Once they're gone, Radu is convinced that Picard has destroyed them as a community. The captain says that they're actually doing the exact opposite.
I thought it was sweet that Harry said goodbye.
I was very moved. Yeah. Not just the fact that he said goodbye to them, because he must have felt something towards them. Not parental, maybe, but as friends, because they clearly tried to look after him. But then when Acalan mentioned the dolphin and offered to go and get it from his home, his quarters, whatever you want to call them, for Harry said, "Keep it, I can make another." That wasn't just a flippant response, "Oh, don't worry about it, I'll make another one." It was more of a case of, "No, I want you to have it."
Yeah.
And I found that really moving.
It was really sweet. You know, the children weren't happy to be there, but, you know, they did. They must have enjoyed themselves at some point. You know, Harry learning how to sculpt and Katie, was it, learned to play the instrument, the blonde girl.
Right. Harry didn't learn how to sculpt. He learned how to use this device that sculpted for him.
Okay. Nitpicker.
If you said it was Katie, she didn't learn how to play that device. She knew that the device would pick up on what she was feeling, and it was actually the device that did the work. So I kind of get where you're coming from. But this wasn't about gaining skills. There's no way that Harry can go back to the Enterprise and suddenly learn how to sculpt. No. Not without that device.
Well, without many years of training.
No, exactly. Or without a strong resolve to learn to be able to reproduce the kind of things he made while he was there, which he could probably do on his own.
But maybe it just...
With enough time and enough mistakes.
Maybe it just helped them open up and realise what they are capable of doing.
Which is what the Aldeans were trying to do in the first place.
They were doing it with the technology, so technically it wasn't the kids doing it. But now, Harry can go home and say, right, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this.
But these were all skills that they were picking up from the people who had known how to do them up to that point. So they were effectively trying to pass how to use that sculpting tool, how to use that mood musical device, from the people who were able to use it, or from the person that was able to use it. So it's like they're passing down the skills to the next generation so that they can then pass them on to their offspring later on.
But like you said, it didn't pass down the skills to actually sculpt or play music, just how to use those tools.
that suggests then that the Aldeans themselves were not capable of sculpting or playing music. They just had the technology in order to be able to do it. Which then
probably been passed down to them from their...
Right, which then neatly goes on to the comment I wanted to make about the custodian. So it mentioned in the review, in fact, Crusher said it, they've been so reliant on their own technology, they've stopped questioning it or understanding how it works. And this is the whole point. And I do believe that this is something that Picard is going to mention possibly in the next scene, that they're at the point now where they've effectively stopped doing things and thinking for themselves. Everything they do, everything they know, everything they are capable of has been provided to them by this unknown force that they call the custodian. But because they don't understand it and they don't know how it works and they don't fully appreciate the request that they're making of it, that is part of the reason that right at the very beginning of this episode, there was the observation that the shield that surrounds the planet is flawed. It is broken. It is full of holes. The Aldeans don't know this because they don't understand it. The custodian probably doesn't understand, probably doesn't know it, because there's nobody actually maintaining it or looking after it. So there are going to be bugs in this system, for whatever you want to call it, that nobody is fixing.
Which would have been Wesley's point when he was questioning the older lady. I can't remember her name.
Was that Duana?
Duana, that's it. When he first meets, quote unquote, the custodian. Right, okay.
Yeah, when he says he wants to understand how it works.
Yeah, it's like who maintains it, who fixes it.
Totally.
Yeah.
They're just about to go through the door that Wesley was asking what's behind it. Duana said, I don't know. But what you've got there is somebody who is so set in their ways, they just accept things for the way they are.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you've got Wesley.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, I'm watching that scene with Wesley and Duana, and it's like, all them questions are going to get really old or get him into trouble at some point if he carries on. Mm. Because she looked like she didn't want to answer them. Or, obviously, she didn't know how to answer them.
That's more likely.
Yeah.
The Aldeans, led by Starfleet personnel, go to the mysterious door and find what Data identifies as the power source. Raji muses that they need to relearn how to look after themselves and use this power source safely. Picard offers their help, which is gladly accepted. The crew successfully reseeds Aldea's ozone layer. Neither the cloak nor the shield could ever be used again if they want to preserve it. So, there has been a phenomenal time jump here, because in the previous scene, Redu is claiming they have no future, they've been destroyed, they've got no way of repopulating their species. And then in the next scene, he's completely sold into the idea that they have been orchestrating their own demise. So at what point did he change his mind? This is another example of an incredibly rushed ending where they spent a lot of time getting up to, I don't know, let's say 40 minutes into the episode, and suddenly they go, oh, bloody hell, we're going to have to finish this somehow. Yeah. Oh, yeah, just you know, tell them that they're okay, and they understand, they'll accept the help, they understand that they're the architects of their own downfall, blah, 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 and just get on with it. It's a common Star Trek thing.
Yes.
Certainly, well, it's certainly a common thing within the first season of TNG. Whether that changes or not, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we've got the main story done, but, well, we've got this ending to fit in as well, so...
I think this is another one that could have very much benefited from a two-part episode.
Yeah, I think I would have liked to have seen more, maybe seen more of the children and what they were doing.
Mm.
Maybe see the reseeding of the ozone layer, maybe with other species coming in that the Enterprise would have to try and beat back, which is what they're good at doing. But we didn't, unfortunately.
No, unfortunately not. And yeah, they could have easily unrushed it added another 40-something minutes to the episode, split it into two, and done it as a two-parter. But as we've identified before, there's no such thing as a two-parter in this particular era of US television.
Yeah. I mean, back then it was all like, oh, yeah, it's all good. We're everybody wins. And
well, there was no need to fight.
No.
Back in the 1980s, there were still, I mean, yeah, there were a heck of a lot more TV stations in America than there were in the UK at the time, but still probably not enough that they needed to be very strategic with how they carry out their programming and their scheduling. That the idea of having a multi-episode arc almost is just not a thing. And I think they said at the time, I can't remember who the production company was at the time, but I think that they said that it's just not something they were interested in. They weren't fussed about doing multi-part episodes. Obviously, the exception to that is the season premieres and finales, but I think they were actually done as feature lengths rather than two episodes in different weeks.
Yeah, I think in the States they were probably shown together.
Yeah.
Which is common. Even now, they do that. But, yeah, I mean, I think there was only maybe the medical dramas and the cop dramas back then that they did serialized and not, like, standalone stories.
Absolutely. But in those ones, what you tended to have was, I suppose, essentially what they had in later Star Trek series. I mean, Enterprise was a good one in that case, that you had your A plot, which was the thing that happened that week or that 2 weeks. Yeah, a podcasting friend of mine used to refer to as the Monster of the Week episode.
Yeah.
But behind that, you had multiple layers of plots. Like in the case of Enterprise, you had things like the Expanse, the Zindi Expanse. You had the T'Pol and Trip romance. You had the, what was her name? Is it Hernandez and Archer, will they, won't they storyline, which all went over multiple episodes, but weren't part of the multi-episode arcs they had set up.
No. I mean, even on the likes of Voyager, I know you don't like that name, but, and even DS9, I don't think there were many continuing storylines.
Mm.
So I don't know whether it was just Star Trek or that particular genre that did that, but a lot of the shows I would have watched seemed to have a continuing storyline.
Just trying to see where Voyager ended, because Enterprise was... Right, so Voyager actually went up to the point where Enterprise was started, because TNG ended... Voyager started, and then DS9 overlapped the two.
Mm.
And then Enterprise kind of started after Voyager ended. But I don't dislike Voyager. I just don't know much about it. I'm getting a lot of the opinions that I'm forming from the likes of Yannick, who obviously doesn't have a very high opinion of Voyager.
I like Voyager. I think it's that girl power thing, you know, first female captain and things like that.
Absolutely.
So.
I quite like Janeway. I thought she was a great captain.
She has some good episodes.
Mm.
But I'm sure at some point, hopefully, you'll get to discuss Voyager and I can be on the show again.
At some point in the next 14 and a half years, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's the point, actually. We're coming up to our year soon.
Yeah. It's only a couple of weeks away, isn't it?
Not even that, because I think we missed an episode. For Christmas.
Of course, yeah.
Mm.
Wow.
Should we get this finished?
Yeah, let's do this.
On the Enterprise, Dr. Crusher reports that the population is responding well to treatment and will become fertile in time. Picard remarks that while the planet's legend will die, its people will live. They leave Aldea, but not before Wesley escorts Alexandra, one of the children, to the bridge, as she wants to thank and hug Picard. When she leaves, everyone on the bridge giggles behind the captain's back as Alexandra's plush toy, a Tribble, has become accidentally stuck to his back.
I wet myself laughing.
Accidentally my butt.
Yeah, I don't think Patrick Stewart knew that.
Oh, do you not?
No. I don't think it was like supposed to happen.
That never even occurred to me that it was either an accident or whether it was a prank. Yeah.
The reaction of the other cast members, it was like they were expecting it.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think it was supposed to happen. I'm not sure that Patrick Stewart knew he had a tribble on his back.
I like that. I like that idea. I like the fact that Picard nearly gave Wesley a rollicking for bringing a child onto the bridge.
Yes.
But until Wesley actually explains what it is she's doing there, he's like, okay. And then he's like, that's a child. I don't know what to do with this.
Obviously, he's the captain and he's got this really authoritative air about him. But he has a really, really good relationship when he works at it with kids.
But he doesn't. Children are his Achilles heel. He admitted that in the first episode of TNG. He asked Will to basically protect him from the children because he does not know how to act towards them. And you could see that when Alexandra put his arms out to him, he was like, what do I do?
Oh, no, I mean, I'm not saying it's an easy relationship, but I think there are several episodes and for later on in the seasons where he's involved with the kids. There's something going on and there's kids that has got to be looked after, or he's, you know, interacting with them in some way. And he's actually quite good with them.
Mm.
But I think in season one, yeah, he's very, just stay away from me.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was good.
I didn't realise, though, that her toy was a tribble. I just thought it was just this hairy thing.
Yeah, I didn't realise. I mean, I've seen tribbles before and it didn't look like one. Well, to be fair, most of the tribbles I'd seen were kind of like bouncing around all over the place.
Yeah, they're just like big furry balls, aren't they, tribbles?
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
They just get everywhere. Anyway, would you like some trivia?
Yes, go on.
So I've got a few items of trivia relating specifically to this episode. Originally, the story featured a subplot where the ship was going to separate, with the saucer section of the ship being held hostage.
Oh!
I have no idea how they were going to execute that in the storyline that we were aware of.
There was a comment, I think it was Worf, when the children were taken, he made a comment, something like, the saucer reports 6 children.
That's right, he did.
So I wonder if that's where that should have been.
Ah, very well spotted.
Well remembered, and I remembered that from last night.
Maybe that was the lead in to what the plot could have been.
Yeah.
Mm. Nice. This was the very first episode of the series to not open with an external visual of the Enterprise.
No, it was the corridor, wasn't it?
It was. It was Riker walking down the corridor.
Yeah.
And the next time that occurs is towards the end of season 2. So it's not a common thing. They usually start with an exterior view.
Yeah. How weird.
I just don't understand why they wouldn't have done it this time around.
I mean, I didn't understand that whole thing in the first place, with the kid running and the school, and I didn't get. Obviously, now I've seen the whole episode. I do. But I just thought it was very random.
I think it was to introduce us to Dr. Bernard.
Yes.
Because he is, I'm trying to remember the name of the other lass. Was it Ruth? The red-headed officer. Crew member, not officer. Who was one of the other parents who was in the conference lounge when they were talking with them.
Possibly.
Dr. Bernard kind of took the lead of the parents in that particular scene. But this other lass, the redhead, she was also quite vocal in that scene. I think her name was Ruth. I can't remember.
It was said so quickly and she was ranting. So, yeah, I think I missed that one myself.
But that's the only reason I can think that scene at the beginning was done. other than just as a light interaction. I don't even know whether we have any more dealings with Dr. Bernard as part of this.
No, well, I mean, we tend to see different crew members, random crew members, maybe once or twice, and then they just disappear.
Harry Bernard Sr. No, we only ever see him in this one episode. So, not sure. And the last piece of trivia I've got is, this was a bit of a family episode, this one.
Okay.
Because both Will Wheaton's sister Amy and brother Jeremy were featured in the episode. They played the children Tara and Mason.
Oh.
Who were two of the kids that were beamed down to Aldea.
Probably the two we didn't meet.
No, they were mentioned. Well, we met them all because they all appeared in the communal area scene.
Yeah, but they didn't speak. And they weren't, like, involved in the activities.
They weren't the key ones, no, certainly.
No.
It was Alexandra, Katie and...
Harry.
And Harry were the three main ones. So yeah. there were three more, of which these two were part of it.
Cool. I knew he had a brother, but I didn't know he had a sister.
Well, you do now.
I do.
And that is why I do these trivia sections.
And that is brilliant.
Excellent. So, unless you've got anything else you want to mention about this particular episode, I mean, what did you think of it as a whole?
As an episode, like, on its own, it was really good. I think it showed a lot of different sides to the main crew. Because, obviously, like I said, we normally see Picard as very straight-laced and authoritative. But you could see there was some anguish, distress, cheekiness with his making up of a Starfleet regulation. I think it was just it was a different side to him.
Human.
Yeah, human. He definitely was more human. With Wesley, I think you saw I don't want to say the father in him, but you saw the grown-up version.
Maturity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jen, I mean, it was a nice episode. It was fun. It was, you know, it was light. There wasn't death, destruction. Everyone was a winner in the end. Nobody died. So, yeah, all in all, it was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, I agree. I think the storyline was great. The acting was pretty good. The kids were amazing. The acting from the younger children was absolutely spot on. And I'm not going to look into it now, but it would be interesting to see if any of those kids have actually had acting careers going forward.
Yeah.
I didn't see any glaring errors with regard to special effects or any of the production at all. So, no, overall, I thought this was a really good episode.
I did catch one continuity error.
Oh, okay.
Going back to the scene with the made-up Starfleet regulation, there's a face-on shot of Will and Picard, and they both turn to go back to their seats. Next, they cut to Data, and he's still turned to look at them, and you can still see Picard's arm right behind him.
Well spotted.
I'm a pernickety thing for things like that.
No, and that's really good. I didn't spot that at all, but it's interesting one to pick out.
But it was just, you know, it was like, okay, they've walked away. Data's still looking at him, and oh, there's a red-sleeved arm, and it definitely wasn't Geordi. Because it was a white hand at the end of the arm, so...
Interesting.
I like continuity errors, things like that.
Oh, anything like that. I'm terrible when I go and look at TV series and films that I've watched that have been around for a while. I often go down to the trivia and goofs section of IMDb.
And then you go back and watch the show and you watch for that goof, yeah.
Only if it's a film that I would necessarily go back and watch again. Like The Matrix, for example. There's huge numbers of goofs in The Matrix.
Never watched them.
What?
But I don't watch many films. At the moment, for the last couple of years, I just don't seem to have the concentration to sit and watch a full movie in one go. So I'd rather be able to do that rather than break it up. Because I hate adverts in films. So breaking a movie up like that is just... I'm just not on. So once I... It's on my list. It is one I do want to watch because our Kieran watched one. Oh, no, it was John Wick he was watching. but same actor. So I will definitely want to watch him.
I still can't believe you've not watched The Matrix. 21 years ago that film came out and you've not watched it.
I know. There's a lot of ones I haven't watched that came out before that. Never watched Jurassic Park.
Oh no, forget that. Watch The Matrix. Right. Is there anything else you want to mention before we close this show?
No. Not off the on the episode, no.
Okay, let's do a bit of housekeeping. Thanks to everyone who has downloaded our previous episodes. We really appreciate you spending a little bit of your time to listen to our show. You can help us spread the love for our show by visiting all of your surrounding pubs and restaurants in the area and dropping a small consignment of TGH beer mats off with the landlord. Or, if you're shielding or in an area where visiting your local hostelry is currently not an option, you can simply share our website on social media.
Our website is at teaearlgreyhot.org, where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and leave a comment for every episode.
You can drop us an email. Our address is feedback@teaearlgreyhot.org. We love to receive your feedback, and unless you tell us otherwise, we may read your email out on the show.
We are also on Twitter and Facebook. Our username for both of those is TEGH Podcast. And we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGH podcast, which is the only place you'll get the link to our unlisted live stream.
Indeed. And thank you very much indeed to Lainey for being our Oh, that's you.
It's me. For being our
communications officer and looking after our social media sites. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always. We have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of the show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution Share Alike license. See our website for details.
This podcast is a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website for more of our amazingly and phenomenal shows over at otherside.network.
Woohoo! The next episode will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1 Episode 18, Home Soil, when Yannick will be back on Home Soil. And I like what we did there. I like what we did there. And joining Dave as guest co-host.
Yeah, because that's what he's been
that's demoted snidey. To. That's mean.
See, the beauty of it is that Yannick will take pretty much whatever I throw at him. And
throw it back 10 times.
I will be leading the next episode anyway, so I'll be doing the review for it. But he is editing it.
Uh-oh.
Lots
of boo-boos in that one.
You're not wrong. So, anyway, thank you very much indeed for listening. Thank you so much, Lainey, for co-hosting this episode with me. I do appreciate it.
Anytime, you know that.
We will be back next week with a whole lot more Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. See ya.
Bye.
So, in the teaser, we are... That was a bloody good start, wasn't it?
2 seconds in and we're already gone.
For goodness sake.
Give me a second. One of my cats is about to knock everything over.
Hi.
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 Sounds like that's all you're getting. We've spent a lot of time waffling.
I know. I like to waffle, though.
No, really?
What are you saying?
There's a shock. What are you saying? Yeah. Excuse me.
I thought you were laughing.
No, that was a burp.
I mean, I haven't watched many of the other episodes, but I have...
Thanks to everyone who has downloaded our previous episodes. I'm going to do that again because I clonked like that.
Don't clonk.
Don't clonk. Thanks to everyone who has downloaded our previous episodes. We really appreciate you spending just a little bit about your time.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.